Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this breakout session on bottle weight reduction. I've been working on this with SW1R for about 6 months, and it does mean one gets a bit of a bottle nerd. I do now weigh every bottle I consume, which is jolly interesting. At least I think it's jolly interesting, but I tell friends that they tell me that I ought to be out more. Nonetheless, all joking aside, the issue of bottle weight and packaging more generally is pretty key in the whole in sort of sustainability debate around wine. I was interviewing a grower in Italy a few weeks ago, and she commented that, you know, it doesn't really matter what she does at vineyard level in terms of the carbon impact, you know, significant chunk, perhaps a third, slightly depending on how you count the numbers, is in the packaging. So we're very lucky to have a very good panel, a very big panel this afternoon, really spanning the sort of full gamut of things from at the production. And we've got Nick Kirk, who's technical director of British Glass. We then, as it were, sort of in the middle, we've got International Wineries for Climate Action, Josep Maria Ribas. And then at the sort of the retail end, we've got Simon Mason, who is head of wine sustainability and due diligence at the Wine Society. I'll be sending another order later, Simon. Barry Dick, who heads up bulk wine sourcing for Waitrose. Linda Johansson, who is from the Swedish monopoly System Bolaget. So she buys everything. And last but not no means least, Martin Brisvik from Ahold Delhaize. And all of these people are members of our working group on bottle weight. What I want to sort of ask each of the panel is, in your view, what is the key reason why we're not moving faster towards lighter bottle weights? What seem to be the key obstacles? Nick, I'm going to start with you. Why do you think we're still sort of having this discussion when it seems apparent that, to a certain extent, lighter weight bottles are a bit of a no-brainer?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm a bit of a glass nerd. I can remember about 15 years ago being caught in Morrison's with some scales weighing wine bottles. And that's how long lightweighting's been around, really. We've been looking at it probably 15, 20 years. And I don't particularly like the word lightweighting. I think the bottle has to be the right weight to serve its purpose. So it has to fit for purpose. But like sort of reducing weight isn't something new. As I say, it's been around 20-odd years. And if you just look across Europe and UK, bottle weights have reduced by about 40% over that period, that sort of 15, 20 years. So it's happening. And glass manufacturers can provide lighter weight bottles. Less than 350 gram bottles are there available. I think the barrier is between the glass manufacturer and the brands. The brands accepting a lighter bottle that may look a little bit different, may even have a different consumer perception. And there is a little bit of sacrifice in the bottle shape. You may need to make it a little bit more rounded. So, for example, a Burgundy bottle is a lot easier to lightweight than a Bordeaux bottle because of the shape of the shoulder. So there does need to be some compromise sometimes in the actual design of the bottle, but it is possible to lightweight. And I just pulled out some figures today, and this is only UK. But in the UK, we are manufacturing over 250 million bottles, wine bottles, less than 350 grams. So there's a lot of bottles going out there being lightweight. So as I say, it's not a new thing, but it's working together as a supply chain to actually use more and more of them as we go forward.
Okay, thanks. Josep, want to come to you next, sort of moving on down the supply chain.
Yeah, totally. I would say that some of the reasons behind this not adoption of lightweight bottle, on one hand, might be ignorance. Ignorance on the impact of these of this initiative. According to IWCA data, we are covering 40 wineries worldwide, and most of them, they have the greenhouse gas inventory from the vineyard until the final consumer, so the entire life cycle of the wine bottle. And packaging accounts for 23% of all carbon footprint. So reducing the emission, reducing the weight of the glass bottle by 10%, it has an incredible impact on your carbon footprint. So probably some wineries don't know that. And actually, that's the lowest hanging fruit that we can collect, and we need to collect urgently, and then go to a second phase and doing other stuff to continue decarbonizing our activities. But I think there is also some fear, fear from the unknown, and there is also some kind of ignorance, and fear of losing clients. No? Heavy bottles have been always the conservative stance. It's like the old-fashioned way of elaborating wine. It's been for a long time a symbol of quality, or at least value. and switching to lightweight bottles has been difficult for some maybe marketing teams, sales teams, but also for some restaurants or client distributors. Because apparently they think that final consumer prefer heavy bottles. But I'm quite against this feeling. I think there are more and more consumers asking themselves, why on earth this bottle of wine that I'm going to drink in one dinner, maybe, which is so heavy, why on earth is so heavy that I'm going to have to throw it away in the bin, in the recycling bin, once it's being drunk? So I think that this is going to change in the years to come, and the younger people know that that's not a sustainable way of consuming wine, and therefore they're going to ask for more environmental solutions such as returnable bottles, and we're going to see this in the near future.
Okay. Barry, I want to come to you next, because you've, as Waitrose, recently made the step of putting small size amounts of wine in into cans rather than bottles, so this is the 187 size. And, you know, this issue of consumer perception, consumers expect a certain thing. How have you found managing that process, and what pushback have you had, I suppose, from your brand people and from customers, you know, people coming in and wanting their wine?
Good question. And you know, I think this is one of the key barriers, is just consumer perception. And I think, you know, both of the last panelists talked about it, is, you know, the lack of like really good qualitative data on what the consumer, you know, thinks about glass and lighter weight glass. So the absence of really good consumer insights is really, really important in this space. Now, the can project you just mentioned, Peter, we're kind of working through the process of implementation at the minute. Internally at Waitrose as a business, we've got a very strong sustainability agenda, and we've made some pretty, you know, firm targets about reducing our carbon footprint really overall as a business. So internally, there's been a lot of encouragement, to make some changes to what we do as a business. And I think there is an acknowledgement that this is going to require a little bit of a nudge to the consumer. And I think cans is one of the areas where I think we've probably got the best chance to give the consumers a little nudge in the right direction, because we've seen some good momentum around something like cans in other areas, like RTDs. There's a lot of acceptance of a format like a can. So I think it's a good opportunity to talk to the consumer about the importance of, you know, reducing, you know, the weight of packaging overall. So I'm hoping that we get some good engagement from the consumers. We had some great press, and that all helps. So the more we can communicate and talk to the consumer about why this is important will be a really key factor. So we haven't had, you know, strong, feedback from our customers just yet. We're lucky as a business. We've got specialists, BWS specialists in each of our branches. I did a bit of sustainability training with those, because I do think they will be fielding some questions from our customers about, you know, why is, you know, can we not buy this in glass anymore, and it's only fine in a can. So, you know, they're definitely going to be in the front line of dealing with some of the, you know, our customers' our questions around this, really.
Thanks, Barry. Simon, having been this wine weighing nerd, I know that most of the own brand, your Society and Exhibition wines that I buy from the Wine Society, you know, most of those bottles, particularly the Society ones, are down at sort of 419, 420 grams, give or take, you know, which sort of implies that you don't perceive too much of a challenge, at least on your own brand, with light weighting of bottles. Do you perceive it might be different when you might, you know, as and when you start to engage with some of the bigger brands on these issues?
I think it will be. I mean, as you say, we've just gone through a process with our Society's own label range to set a maximum bottle weight of 420 grams for those, which has been very favorably received so far with our customers and also with producers. Our more premium range, the Exhibition range, we do see a heavier starting point for those. And those are typically more classic Appellation wines from France, for example. And I think there is more of a conversation we need to have with those producers. But we are starting to build up our own data around sales with the lighter weights. And I think we should be in a position to engage with the producers a little bit more to give them the confidence to switch to lighter weight glass, even in some of these slightly more traditional wines. It was interesting that Jose mentioned fear. I'd written down fear as one of my reasons for the slowness of change as well. And I think it is this, we need to build up some decent data that that premium wine consumers are quite happy to buy expensive wines in the lightweight bottle. And I think we can do that as retailers. We're quite fortunate that we can also engage with our customers and have the conversation around why we're doing this as well. And we have been doing that through some of our kind of printed materials and online presence as well. And it helps to set the scene, I think. And we are finding increasingly that our customers are engaging with that narrative. So whereas previously it was a conversation around perhaps tradition and the sort of the history of the property and the beautiful pictures of the barrel room and so on, now people are much more interested in looking at the sustainability credentials and what is actually being done for the environment as well. So I think it's a really good time to be having that conversation, and we in some cases have been pushing against a quite open door with consumers now.
Yeah. I think the point a couple of you've made about the lack of insight. I mean, I've obviously been reviewing this for the piece of work we're doing. And what's interesting is there's not been a decent widespread piece of work done on consumer perception of these things for at least 5 or 6 years. And obviously in that period of time, understanding and awareness of sustainability has much come up the agenda. But interestingly, also there's one study that particularly looks at Spanish consumers that says that actually those people that consider themselves to be experts in wine don't make the association between bottle weight and quality, which sort of implies that actually at the premium end of the market, there should almost be less pushback. Okay, so we've looked a bit at the UK market. So keen to go slightly further afield, Martin. I know that some of the governments in Europe have been pushing quite hard about, packaging weights, about rattling their proverbial sword about. This is something we need to do. What's your view on the key obstacles to this at the moment?
I think the most of the key obstacles have been addressed already. I think it's customer perception or assumed customer perception, and yes, I think also brand owners are very hesitant to lose sales, so they are not the most keen to do it. And for a retailer like us in a very competitive field, it's also the fear of losing market share in our market. But that being said, I think yes, there's going to be EU laws governing this, In advance of that, our company, Aldelez, has now issued a target of a footprint reduction of 45% in the Netherlands by 2030, across Scope 3 as well. So when I was recently I was visiting suppliers in South America, and they were like, but we are very sustainable with we generate our own energy, et cetera, et cetera. So their whole operation was carbon neutral. I said, yes, but this also applies to the bottles that you sell to us. And they're like, whoa. Mm-hmm. So they really don't grasp yet how far this is going to go. And we are, it's part of the Science Based Targets Initiative and the Race to Zero. And it means in 2050, it has to be zero. So it makes sense right now to talk about lightweight bottles. I think you have to look at it in a broader sense and say, it's not only about glass. We have to look at alternative packagings as well. So it's not about lighter glass. It's about less packaging.
We'll come to that in a minute, because that's absolutely right. But I just want to come to Linda on this one, because I mean, you are in the slightly unique position, you and the other monopolies, of basically being in the lucky position that your consumers don't have any alternative. If you decide that you're going to exclude certain bottle weights, then it's not that your Swedish consumer can go to the place next door, because they can't, there isn't one. So I know some of the conversations we've had is around the fact that, yes, you have influence as the Scandinavian monopolies, but, perhaps a sort of more joined up pressure. What's your take on the, why we're not moving faster in the direction we ought to be?
Yeah, I mean, to us, it is a bit sort of puzzling. I mean, again, talking about sort of losing sales and so on. I mean, we don't see any loss of sales or selling going down for if a bottle were to change into a lighter weight bottle, for example, because we very often hear this from certain origins that when we say we want to have something in a lighter bottle, they can't do it because they sell to other markets where the weight of the bottle actually has a very big impact. So of course, we feel that, okay, our customers, they don't really notice the difference, or they don't put so much weight in it, so to speak. So it's fine, but therefore we see it as really important, of course, that we collaborate in this space internationally, because we can't, you know, even though we are quite big as a buyer in that sense, because we are the only retailer, like you rightly said, in Sweden, we're not big enough to get some of the big origins or big producers to change only for us. Some of the explanations that we very often hear to why it's going slow, it's because it's a quite big process to change the bottle. Nicolas, you mentioned some of this earlier, depending on the shape and so on, and molds, and if there's design in this. I mean, we have very recently introduced maximum weight. I mean, we are following the definition of 420 grams for a lightweight bottle, but we have also said that we need to sort of work from two ends, encourage more to go directly into a lightweight bottle, but we also need to set a maximum of 750 grams for a wine bottle, because we still saw that there were surprisingly many quite heavy bottles that came into our assortment and were selling quite well. So this is one way how we are addressing the topic of both sort of encouraging, but also that we need to put a very sort of firm stop that from March 1st, 2024, bottles cannot weigh more than 750 grams. So we're starting actually quite nice, to be honest, because we want everyone on board, and we think that it's very important to communicate a very strong message here. And this limit is something that then we will gradually push down towards the definition of lightweight bottle. But I do also just want to mention, Nicolas, what you were talking about, also right weight, because, I mean, we've also seen those kind of examples that it's important to look at the whole supply chain here, that if a bottle becomes too lightweight, you might have to add on additional packaging, or it increases sort of other aspects. So I think it's important to keep that in mind, but we can never get around the fact that it's round, it's fragile, and it is heavy, the heaviest type of packaging out there. And that poses a lot of sort of implications looking at it from a transportation perspective, people handling throughout the supply chain. So we will always, regardless of what the topic is, if we talk about recycled content or whatever, we will always have to come back to the actual weight itself. So that was one of the reasons also why we wanted to put in a maximum weight and start also working from that angle.
I just want to pick up with Nick on that specific point, because, and then move on to Martin about the broadening this out beyond just bottle weight. Nick, what's that kind of cutoff point, the point at which you get a bottle that's sufficiently light that it means it requires significant or materially larger amount of other packaging, you know, because you can imagine that you might have a 200 gram bottle, but it would have to be wrapped in cotton wool. How light can you get before you end up having to fundamentally rethink the other packaging components?
Yeah, I've asked this question many times, and it's really difficult to answer because it really does depend on the shape of the bottle. As I say, like a Burgundy bottle is quite easy to lightweight and make it still sufficient in strength. So all bottles that are produced by glass manufacturers will pass the requirements, the strength requirements, the specification that's specified. So they are fit for the purpose. I think part of this discussion is we need to look down the whole supply chain, because I've done quite a lot of factory audits, and you find sometimes the actual filling line is not quite set up right to actually take those bottles and treat them in the right way, and you tend to get lots of impacts. And it's quite an easy fix. And as Linda mentioned, the secondary packaging is always a consideration. So you can make a 350 gram Burgundy bottle will be fit for its purpose. And it should go in the same secondary packaging that a heavier bottle go in. But the filling line is probably the hurdle, and the logistics line on how it's handled. So it is thinking along the whole line. If we all join up together, we can actually introduce these lighter weight bottles to be used and they won't break.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. We'll come on to that collaboration piece in a minute. Yeah. And I know Erica's been commenting on this in the chat, that it is. This has to be everyone's problem, not just one part of the supply chain. And certainly, I was up at NSERC in Chester last week, and Mark, who runs their bottling line there, was saying very much the same thing, that it's a question of managing those pressure points within a line. As long as you can do that, which is, as you've said to me as well, Nick, it just requires a bit more sensitivity than otherwise might be the case. Martin, I want to come back to a point that you raised just now around, you know, at the end of the day, the bottle weight discussion is the top of a much bigger, and I was going to say thornier iceberg, but I'm sure that's meteorologically a bit of a mess of things to put together. Okay, we're doing bottle weight now. What might come next? You know, because you had, for example, one of the Scandi monopolies, Alco, is saying that they want everything in not glass by 2030. Others are, you know, for example, NSERC is saying, well, that's unnecessary because by 2027 we'll be able to produce bottles which are more or less zero carbon. What do you see as being the obvious, or not the obvious, the next steps we should be taking in this space? You know,
yeah. I think right now, before we have actual carbon zero glass, which is of course in the end the best solution for wines you want to keep for longer, we have to make a range of alternative packagings available to our customers, see what fits best for which purpose. So we're talking about cans for quick consumption, PET for regular at home consumption, and you will have some glass bottles left still for those wines that you want to keep for longer, but those need to be produced in a sustainable way, which means, I think, hydrogen-powered ovens, etc. But nice to mention, one thing that wasn't mentioned is that the AOPs of certain wines sometimes require the wine to be bottled in glass, because we tried at some point to put a Pinot Grigio della Venezia in PET, and we weren't allowed to do it. So there's some conservatism, I don't know if that's the right pronunciation, in the wine world itself too. And the AOPs are, of course, politically driven and very slow to change sometimes. But yes, I think up until 2030, we're going to develop a lot of alternative packagings, lighter weight, until we have, which I think is might be the holy grail, is sustainably produced glass, which, because then you don't have the downsides and you don't of any side, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still an argument that it might need to be lighter simply for the other benefits, for example, in transportation and materials handling. I mean, I was speaking to one producer who was saying that, you know, they'd moved to lighter weight bottles, and one benefit was fewer backaches amongst their warehouse stuff, because even though individually a bottle, you know, one lighter weight bottle isn't much lighter, if you're lifting a case of 12 or moving a pallet around, the wear and tear on individuals and machinery is less. And just to pick up on that other point about the AOPs, we are actually in discussion with Origin, which is the sort of the trade body for the GIs, for exactly that. I mean, I think they're realizing that they need to make a stand on environmental and sustainability issues. So watch this space, you know, more to come on that. Nick, I want to go to you on this one, the kind of Martin's comment about Holy Grail being carbon-free glass.
Yes.
Just be interested, I mean, given what NSERC's talking about, how replicable is that, all of those sorts of questions?
Yeah, to decarbonize glass making is possible. The challenge is the availability of the right fuels, and one of the main fuels would be renewable electricity. We can melt glass using electricity. So if that happens, it's totally carbon free. The other options, I think was already mentioned, and I think Martin mentioned it, is hydrogen. Again, if hydrogen is made from renewable electricity, that's totally carbon free. So the options are there. I think the challenge is not just the glass industry or the wine industry. It's national, international debate on energy supply. The whole globe has got to do this conversion away from fossil fuels to these renewable led fuels. And as I say, electricity is there. As you mentioned, NSERC have a pathway to have a furnace in a few years' time. And without a doubt, and I know many other glass manufacturers are following that type of solution to look at hydrogen or electricity or both mixed together. So it will happen, but it will happen over a period of time as furnaces are replaced, because these furnaces last 20 years or so. So it has to be scheduled over a long period of time. But the industry will meet the 2050 target.
Yeah. Okay, Barry, you know, you've to some extent started experimenting with the next question with your cans. Where do you think the next stage could be? What might join up with others look like that might make a change from your side more doable?
No, I think there's been some really good points made. And, you know, I definitely think with glass right weighting, you know, to Nick's point, you know, I just wonder sometimes, have we got bigger fish to fry? You know, I think, as Simon said, you know, there's been a lot of work done over a long period of time to get the weight of glass down. And for the high volume lines, that's definitely been done. Even the big brands, I think there's been a lot of work done to get the weight of glass down. So what I kind of sometimes think is, you know, are we just chasing on this topic, you know, the extra kind of the last sort of 2-3% to squeeze out of it? You know, as Nick says, in the meantime, will you get, you know, some great solutions in terms of the energy required to make glass? That'll happen in the background. But so, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, what I would love is a big, you know, carbon footprint of everything that we have, and modelling different solutions. If I changed from, you know, at the minute from X amount of glass to X amount of alternative formats, what would that number look like? And does that mean our priority should absolutely be about chasing alternative formats? So I think that's definitely something to bear in mind with the glass, you know, right weighting debate, is have we got bigger fish to fry, which is really good. And I think the alignment of the, you know, the consumer occasion to the right format is really, really important. You know, I'm sure in Sweden, there's been great education around, you know, bag and box are brilliant for, you know, heading away on the weekend, and cans are great for jumping on the train. So, you know, I definitely, as you know, as we talked about at the beginning, the big challenge is about talking to the customers or our customers and the consumer about, you know, the right, you know, the right format for the right occasion. And that's definitely, you know, I think going to be a huge part of the solution if we can change that mindset.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's also true with the on-trade as well, isn't it? Where you don't actually see the bottle off until you've already ordered it. Josep, you know, looking more broadly in, you know, that whole carbon impact of winery, where do you see the next step will be, you know, as and when we solve the problem around bottle weight, what comes next?
Well, yeah, even solving the problem of the weight, there is still a large amount of carbon footprint embedded in the packaging. I think we are in a situation quite similar to the car industry, right? There is no one single best solution. Now we have diesel, gas, electrical, plug-in hybrid, hydrogen cars. So it's kind of a similar situation here. We have lightweight bottles, heavier bottles. We have alternative packaging, and we also have other ways of transporting wine without packaging, which is bulk, for instance. And I think we have to work on a double strategy here from the point of view of the glass manufacturers. Nick, glass manufacturers need to not just revamp their ovens, but switch to electricity as fast as possible and reduce the carbon footprint of glass. But the good thing of glass is that it's the only material that allows for a returnable system, because the other alternative materials that are going to appear if glass doesn't provide a quick enough decarbonization on packaging, they don't have this positive aspect of reutilization. They have a lower carbon footprint, but I believe their impact is not so much extended over time. Once we will find a better solution for glass, which might be sending the wine in bulk, and I'm thinking now of Systembolaget, the Nordic monopolies, if we send the wine in bulk and we introduce a returnable system over there, then the glass bottles, they can just turn into this system, and the carbon footprint will be much lower, and it makes sense because we are using less resources, basically.
the natural person to bring in here then is now Linda about return systems, and there's been some discussion of it in the chat as well. It's an interesting one. Linda, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I grew up, we had reusable wine bottles in Sweden. I used to remember going to Systembolaget with my parents carrying, you know, bags of wine bottles to return, because at that time, the Swedish government also had a monopoly of also importing and buying all the wine. So then it was, of course, easier. So everything was more or less bottled in Sweden. Then again, the range was a lot smaller, so I don't think we want to go back to that per se. But of course, this is something that we are looking into, how we could do that. Again, I guess that's one of those topics also that, you know, how can we collaborate bigger? Is that something that is going to come within EU, or what's the industry doing here? I'm sure, you know, us and the other monopolies and maybe other retailers too are really interested, but it is a really tough nut to crack. As of now in Sweden, the only reusable bottles we have is for beer. And then obviously that's only for a couple of sort of Swedish beer companies that utilize that possibility. But going forward, I definitely, you know, would like to see that. But how to go about it seems practically quite challenging. I mean, there is one UK retailer, right, that has done a quite big trial, didn't include wine, I think, but at least beer. It's hard to get that going from a business perspective, but also practically all the sort of steps that needs to be taken into account. But Josef, of course, your idea there sounds quite interesting. Then again, another argument that we get when we sometimes encourage bulk shipping, or that we ask for a climate smarter packaging that is not available in a certain country, is that then we are taking employment away from that country. Mm. I always keep asking when those arguments come up, how many, you know, employment opportunities are lost, because I'm not sure it's exactly in the bottling phase where most people are employed. But of course, it's always a tricky question when you need to kind of, you know, look at social development and employment opportunities versus CO2 emissions.
Mm. Yeah, but I think that comes back to the thing, there's always balancing acts. And when I've heard that point made, particularly in relation to the South African sector, and not just from one person, I've heard it from several, that it's that bulk shipping, whilst might make sense from an environmental perspective, would have potential ramifications of for job creation. But again, I guess then the question is how, and we'll come to this in a minute, you know, how we might you know, a greater collaboration might assist that problem being addressed through finding alternative employment creation. Simon, you've said that you've talked about the discussion you're able to have with your members, you know, because Wine Society is in a slightly different position, yeah, because those of us that buy from you are members of the society, yeah, and it's a club effectively. And I've certainly seen in some of your, you know, the 1874 magazine, you know, discussion of, and promotions around B&B, for example. How's that going?
I think it's safe to say that we're at the early stages, but we've got some very ambitious plans for the next year and then the next 10 years, I suppose. So we shall be launching a trial range of own label products in bag and box imminently. Making the same product available in glass, in bag-in-box, and an alternate packaging format as well. The pricing will be comparable, and the intention is to basically assure ourselves and our customers that the quality is within various parameters is equal across the formats, basically allowing members to make a sustainable choice with all other things being equal. So we shall be launching that this year, which will be very interesting. And we'll be, you know, engaging with our customers, our members on that to get their genuine feedback, and also telling them how challenging it's been. Assuming that goes well, we've got our sort of 10-year target, greenhouse gas target that we're looking to reach. And that is, like others have mentioned, it's going to be a sort of portfolio approach. So we're working on the right weighting side of things. looking to bring the average bottle weight down, looking to increase the recycled content of the glass, because we're never going to move completely to alternate packaging. But we see that there is a big opportunity to move a lot of the more everyday wines into alternate pack. For us, cans are a little bit tricky given the logistics of an online kind of sales operation, but we see bag in box and potentially some other 75 CL formats as being a real opportunity. And we'd look to move a considerable quantity of our sales into those over the next 10 years. At the same time, we're also playing around with trying to work out how we can make bulk or sort of intermediate bulk work for us as well, which will be very interesting. That'll be an interesting one for our members who are perhaps a bit more traditional and still expect to see the bottled at the chateau sort of appearing on the label. So we need to, again, assure ourselves that the quality works. We need to come up with a process that means that it still makes commercial sense for everybody. And to Linda's point, we've already had conversations around the social implications of some of those decisions. So that's a longer term project. But we are in a quite fortunate position that we can play around with a few of these opportunities and get some really good quality feedback from our members. So it's going to be quite an interesting 12 months, actually, as far as those initial projects are concerned.
It's funny, isn't that the bottles of the chateau, those of us who've seen a sort of a grotty mobile
bottling line in the car park at the chateau,
It rather loses the romance at that particular point in time. That yes, give me bulk shipping when you've it's all been, you know, produced.
Well, I'd love an absolutely fantastic facility packing in France. It's all shipped beautifully to the UK and then bottled at a BRC A+ certified packers in the UK. I'd have that over a mobile line and some of the properties we deal with, but there is that conversation that we need to have with our customers. But I think they are more willing to listen now, perhaps.
Yes, exactly. So kind of moving this on, I mean, the perception I've had often from looking at this topic is that there's quite a lot of siloing within the wine supply chain, and there's not perhaps as many conversations going on as there might be. So how do we better join up interests? So again, I'm going to kind of go along the supply chain and sort of say, well, what do you think in terms of collaboration with other elements of the supply chain would most help in pushing this discussion forward? So Nick, I'm going to start with you first on that.
Oh, crikey, you're giving the most difficult question answer. Yes, without a doubt, we do need to work along the whole supply chain. And I think it's already been mentioned, it isn't a problem of one particular part of the supply chain. In the UK, we are forming something called Glass Futures, which is a £54 million investment by the UK government and the glass sector to actually build an innovation centre for glass production. So it'll be looking at all these challenges of lightweighting, making, redesigning a product, heading towards net zero. So as a glass industry, we are working there. There's quite a lot of brands that are already engaged in that type of project. So people like Diageo, Heineken, and all the big beer brands are already involved. I don't believe there's that many wine brands all involved at this moment in time. So again, that's an opportunity to bring all the supply chain together.
Okay. Josep, you know, arguably you are trying to sort of bring people together. I mean, what do you think is still missing and what do we need to do more and better of in terms of sort of cross-industry collaboration?
Yes, we try to bring together the entire value chain. It's not easy. And Sustainable Roundtable is doing a great action on that end. So thanks for that and for the option to participate here as well. And I would add that we need to act very urgently. Those being part of Science-Based Targets initiative, and IWCA is obviously totally aligned with Science-Based Targets, you know that this percentage of reductions are really ambitious in the mid and long term. We are being asked to reduce by 50% our emissions by 2030, and this in just 7 years' time. So we need to act really, really quickly. And what I think it might help other wineries to continue reducing the weight of bottles is if we see a firm commitment from retailers to kind of privilege those lightweight bottles and also to kind of define or set standards on what is a lightweight bottle and also kind of do some pedagogy with our consumers and explain them why it's so important that choice. It's not just a matter of it weighs a little bit more, weighs less. No, it has a lot of impact on the carbon footprint, on the material use, on the virgin material use. So it's good for them to know it. And just to say that on behalf of IWCA, we are totally open to discuss and collaborate with any initiative that may arise from that.
Okay, thanks, Josep. Martin, how do you think, you know, if you had a lamp, then you could get three wishes or two wishes or one wish about better collaboration along the supply chain, what would you wish for?
Well, I think some of the things are already being done. I think as a retailer or the final reseller, we have the task to engage with our customers, so who are the end consumers, and yes, then put focus on those lightweight bottles or alternative packagings. For example, we are now in discussions with one of our major brands to put one of their major tiers in alternative packaging, and we say, okay, but our job then is to put full emphasis on this in our communications towards our customers, explain to them why they should do this, because we need to make it a success for them and also for ourselves. So I think, and then of course, the transport bit is in between. You have to make it as efficient as possible, but I think that's a no-brainer. But I think the main role that we need to take is being a conduit between the producer and the end consumer, and make sure that those the better solutions are better promoted, basically. Mm.
Linda, what's your take on this? I mean, I'm always pleased that you see SWR as being a good vehicle for sort of collaboration and for try to identify joined up sort of solutions. But what do you see as being the main sort of hurdle or the main challenge that we need to be thinking about?
I mean, the main hurdle in one way for us as a monopoly is that in our, you know, setup, we're not a direct customer of a glass manufacturer, for example. You know, our only contact, so to speak, is actually with, you know, suppliers and to some extent producers. So, I mean, adding on a little bit to what Morten just was talking about, I think it's really important to define all the different stakeholders' role in this. And I agree with, you know, that as a retailer, our role is, you know, really to educate customers, but also what we put on the shelves, because I think that, or at least I don't believe that we will, you know, consume ourselves right in all of these sort of sustainability challenges. I think, you know, we cannot only rely on customers to make the right choice. We have a responsibility to what we decide to sell and put on our shelves. But of course, the supply and the demand here needs to go hand in hand. So I believe that, you know, working together here along the value chain to define the roles of the stakeholder, but also help facilitate that, because as of today, we don't have direct contacts actually with the ones who sit on the solutions here. Mm. We don't have so much direct contact with glass manufacturers or, you know, hydrogen makers and so on. I mean, there's so many sort of important steps and stakeholders here. And of course, I believe that the SWR could be a very important sort of facilitator here to get these conversations going, because we can, of course, reach out. We do that. I mean, myself, just before Christmas, went to a major glass manufacturer. But that's all the time sort of one at the time. I feel like we don't have the time, that it's sort of just limited to how much I can do in my role. We need to move quicker here, and therefore to work more together.
Okay, thanks. I want to sort of, notwithstanding we've got quite a big panel here, there's someone in our audience, one of the sort of the close friends of SWR, Erica Lerfing from Vintage Wine Estates, who's on the production side of things. And I just like her take on this sort of collaboration, this, you know, how do we get greater join up along the supply chain? Erica, over to you.
Yeah, sorry for flooding the chat with questions and thoughts. And I really do think that one of the key things we need to do is more partnering between the retailers and the large producers to get this to work. Because of course, we are the ones in dialogue with the glass producers, and we need the information on what happens when a lighter weight hits the shelf, when an alternative packaging hits the shelf. What do you see among consumer behavior? Because that's the stuff that will drive our marketing side. And we would probably like to be asked more what our process looks like for changing packaging and for, you know, finding these different molds and so on. And it is quite costly to develop new bottle molds. And I mean, we're very happy to have found one, but it's taken time and money and so on. So more collaboration, and also between larger producers, maybe. I know this is, the marketing departments aren't going to love this, but maybe more of us can agree on certain bottle weights and make bigger pushes so that we're all going in the same direction, making less room for someone to stick out with their heavy bottles and mm-hmm. making it more of a consumer standard. But I definitely would encourage, I would love any conversations I can have directly with retailers on this, and probably even retailers that we're not working that much with, because it might be less political. I think is good. So the SWR is a great way for us to, I'll get together in the same room and have these discussions.
Thanks for the shameless plug, Erica. But all joking aside, I mean, I think one of the things that's going to end up coming out of our work on bottle weight is to try and do that. I mean, we've talked about own brands, where obviously retailers have a greater ability to affect change. But I think also there will be a relatively significant number of producers, you know, like you, Erica, who, and you sell to probably quite a lot of people who are on screen now, and you know, and if there can be a joined up position so that you, as it were, only have one target to aim at, then obviously that suits everyone. And I think that's what we'd like to try and achieve. We've got 2 minutes left, so I just wanted to just because there's a particular point I want to pick up with you, Barry, about which is chicken and which is egg. Is it that we have to be beholden to what consumers think they want, or is it up to us as an industry and you as retailers to some extent tell them what they want in this regard?
Yeah, look, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Linda hit the nail on the head. Is, you know, as a responsible ethical retailer, we've got to do our, you know, we've got to take a position and show some leadership. I think if you ask the average, you know, Waitrose consumer, do they think that the wine team at Waitrose should be, and you know, informing and educating them about the right things to do, both from a wine quality point of view and from an environment point of view, I think they would say, yeah, that's your job. You know, you guys get on with it. And that is really our job, and we do have to get on with it. I think the big thing is, what is really interesting is, we're all, even globally, from Linda to, you know, the US and the UK, we're all seeing the same solutions, you know, so we're all going to have to, and what we end up doing is, you know, talking to the customers or consumers about, you know, the important bits about why, you know, bag and box is great for certain occasions, and using more alternative formats. So we end up all kind of communicating the same thing to our customers. And it would be amazing if you could have some sort of, you know, joined up, you know, communications campaign that hit the same messages. So I think we do lose a little bit, and we're all kind of talking about the same things to our customers at different times, about different things slightly. So, but I think what is great is that we're all looking at the same solutions.
Yeah, I think I hope to say that's where we as SWR can fit in. Well, we've come to the end of our time together. Thanks, Erica, for your cameo appearance. But thanks really very much to the panel for some excellent insights. Linda, Josette, Martin, Nicholas, Simon, and Barry, thank you very much. It's always a fascinating discussion, and from our perspective, watch this space. We're reporting back on our initial work on bottle weight in the next month or so. So I don't think that's certainly not going to be the end of the journey, but at least it hopefully will provide a sort of joined up starting point for exactly the sort of collaboration we're talking about. You know, making sure it's not just an edict that comes down from the retail side, but actually works along that supply chain, works with, you know, suppliers about their relationship with the bottle manufacturers, work with bottle manufacturers about, you know, how to design to expand the designs and so on. So watch this space. Thank you, everyone. Thanks to the panel. Always great to talk to all of you. And see you later in the day.